There are so many things as humans that we don't really understand. There are mystic, magical, fated things, as well as otherworldly realms that we just can't comprehend unless it's through the journey of our own soul. I'm your host, Steffi, aka The Spirit Sis. I'm a psychic medium, astrologer, and intuition teacher, and I'm here to take you on an exploration of all things spiritual. I'm going to connect to source, give you divine downloads, and I want to keep you in the spirit loop. So here is the psychic scoop. Hi, lovelies. Welcome to Psychic Scoop. I'm your host, Steffi, aka Spirit Sis. I am an evidential psychic medium and professional astrologer here to usher you through your spiritual awakening. This episode was highly requested on my Instagram about conscious family estrangement, low contact, no contact, and setting boundary with toxic family members. It has a little bit of a splice of life for everybody. I know there are tons of different dynamics in your family, in my family, in everyone's families. There's always that either one aunt or uncle that says something that pushes you, or there can be something even deeper like emotional abuse or homophobia. I mean, the list goes on. And before I even want to start this episode, I just want to disclaim I am not a mental health professional. This is coming from my lens of experience, being someone who has been consciously estranged from family for 5.5 years now. And I've gone through lots of therapy myself. So not that I'm like overqualified by a certificate to talk about this, but I've done a lot of research. I've read a lot of books, and I'm going to just try my best to emulate a spiritual conversation surrounding this. And even if you have the best relationship with your family, know that's karmic. And that's amazing. And there could also be something you can take away from this. If there's someone in your life that's pushing your boundaries or making you feel uncomfortable, I think the best takeaway is feeling empowered in your life, not feeling so, I would say, obligated to have friendships or relationships with people that don't make you feel good. That's kind of the bottom line. And the second I started to shift my perspective on this, being a former people pleaser, which, by the way, was something that I was groomed to be. I was groomed to be hypervigilant based on my childhood. And that's also why a lot of healers or very intuitive or empathic people, you know, they're so sensitive to the world around them because that's all they've ever known. Even in utero, in your mom's belly, you know, if she was going through something, you could have felt that. So it goes deeper. It goes into ancestry. It goes into all of the women or men in your family, the lineage. Has there been abuse or hardship or stress in those family lines? So this topic is multifaceted and it's super layered like an onion. And I tried to break it down as much as possible so we could kind of compartmentalize and get you feeling like you could be in a really, like I said, empowered and up-leveled place. And this isn't something that happens overnight. This isn't a decision you just wake up one morning and you're like, I'm not going to talk to my family anymore. This is something that usually happens over time. For me, it was like close to a decade. So yes, I'm going to break this episode up into just talking about low contact, no contact, and toxic family. A few of you so lovingly asked me to share my story. So I will, as much as possible, without taking up hours and hours, because it's close to 30 years of trauma. And then a lot of you submitted really lovely questions that I think are going to give great insights. And I've said this so many times on the podcast, and I'll say it again. Whenever I'm asking for intel on Instagram, like, hey, what do you want to hear? Or like, tell me or ask me anything for the podcast, I always believe it's because it's being channeled through the collective in some way. All of my episodes are spirit-led, so spirit has some sort of responsibility. And whenever I'm like sending out those signals, it's like an extension of spirit. So when you respond or something comes to your mind, I really feel like it's all because we're all in the same spirit group and we're all meant to heal and to learn from these conversations. Like, I truly believe that. If even if you're listening today, or it's your first time listening and this is like the first episode, or if this is your 100th and something episode, it doesn't matter. I love you and I mean that, and I feel like we're meant to be here together for some divine reason. So let's jump into the episode and let's talk first about just toxic people and setting boundaries with toxic family members. Now, you're going to have to do your own self-assessment here and decide what you tolerate as toxic and what you feel needs a boundary. So this is going to be a little more vague, but I had already said it's basically anything that makes you feel not good enough or makes you feel less than, or someone minimizes or makes a remark. I think everybody alive has a family member that annoys them in this way. Even if it's like an older cousin that's like, you're not good enough, or you can't play with us, you know, even when you're little, or like that aunt that comments on your body or your weight, or a competitive family member. It's so weird. It's like, why are you competing with me? I'm 8 years old. But there's so many dynamics that happen in families. And it's like I said, it's so multi-layered. I think the biggest thing to do is to have the awareness when you are around, you know, this family member, or this could even be extended family member or friend that you don't even see that sparingly. And you'll know how it feels if you tighten up around that person, or you change the way you normally act to put on a different persona. So if you find yourself being performative, like maybe you are trying to say that I have all these accolades and this, that, because you want to impress them. Or you are finding yourself wanting to dress a certain way because you know they're going to comment on your weight. Or you're worried about them looking over your shoulder when you're eating. There's a lot of body weight issues here. And this is just going from all of the conversations I've had with my girlfriends over many, many years and knowing all their family dynamics. It just seems like a common one, especially with women. But even with men, it could be this leveling up. Like, are you getting a big salary? Like, what are you doing in your life? Again, anything that just makes you feel like you have to bend or stretch to fit into the narrative of what they think you are, that's already toxic. Every single person should just authentically accept you as you are, even if that means it goes against what they believe in. Because listen, as humans, we're allowed to have our own thoughts and opinions, and we're adults. I mean, it's especially harder when you're younger because you're still learning who you are. But if you're above the age of 18 and people are still treating you like a baby, Like, you don't even have to actually physically say yes to these invitations anymore, because you have to protect yourself from harmful behaviors or dynamics that are being kind of thrust upon you. So the bottom line is boundaries, right? Like, there are guidelines and rules and limits that you have to establish. And those things really have to align with your physical, emotional, and mental health. And all of this comes down to a level of self-respect, right? And you want to maintain your sense of autonomy and agency in any relationship you have. An example of a boundary, it could even just be, let's say it's a physical boundary. It could be personal space, right? Like, maybe you don't want to sit at the kids' table again. Maybe you feel like there's a lot of people sitting on the couch and they're trying to say, come on over and sit over. And you're like, I'm not really feeling comfortable. Or even if you're talking to someone and they're getting close to you, a physical boundary is just putting space between you and that person. You don't even necessarily have to verbalize this one, but you can also say no or no thank you. Remember, no is a full and complete sentence. Now, the emotional boundaries are where it gets a little more difficult, because this has to do with you expressing your feelings, right? Like, no, mom, I don't want to be around you when you've had that much to drink. Or, you know, I will join you for dinner after mass because I am not comfortable going to church anymore. Or you can express an emotional boundary like, I don't want you to talk about my body. Let's please change the subject. And you don't have to explain yourself with a boundary. And that's where I think a lot of us get caught up. Like, there needs to be some sort of narrative around why you're expressing yourself. It just needs to be a no or a no thank you or I'll come at this time. And that's that. If there's going to be repercussions and there's going to be noise around that, and there possibly will be, that has nothing to do with you. Like, what people think of you is none of your business. And trust me, that's the hardest thing to separate yourself from. But even if it is that aunt or that uncle or that cousin or whatever, could even be a sibling that just always is kind of like bugging you and pestering you and saying something rude. You know, there's definite techniques you can use. And one of the ones I love to use is something called the gray rock. And this is actually a very common technique that you use with someone who is narcissistic or could be toxic, right? And I've used this with my family before. And the whole point is you want to be as boring as a gray rock because a lot of times people are intimidated or want to poke at you because you're on a higher frequency, or maybe you are being magnetic and they want to bring you down. They want to shrink you. That's the goal. Sometimes it's subconscious, like they don't know they're doing it. Sometimes they're projecting. It's a form of their own trauma, right? Everyone is always putting garbage on other people because they haven't looked at themselves. We all know that. So if that's the case, if someone makes a comment on, you know, oh, so you're a psychic medium, like what's that about? I can either just say, yeah, I am, with absolutely nothing, or say, that's interesting. Or you can ask them to repeat the question. What was that you said? And that one is a little more like tactical, like you have to really be on top of it, because then if they repeat it again, they could double down. But personally, I just give very boring blank statements. Yeah, I'm a psychic medium. And I don't elaborate, because there's nothing I can say to this person that's going to satisfy them. It's only going to be fuel for this person, okay? So I'm sure you know who I'm talking about right now from the beginning when I said it. I know you probably have one person or maybe several in your mind. And the best thing to do if you are around this family member or you have to talk to them, you just keep an even keel. They want your reaction, and it's vital that you do not give it to them. You can also say something along the lines of like, that's an interesting question to ask me. You know, or whatever it is. Oh, you know, that's interesting you keep commenting on my weight. And then the last boundary, which I think is very important, is it could be time boundaries, like setting limits on your availability or not being able to be there the way that everyone expects you to. Like if the affair or the event goes on for hours and hours and you're expected to be there from dawn till dusk, doesn't make sense. You know, you are a person that has your own autonomy and your own life, and maybe you have work, maybe you have other priorities. It doesn't matter what you have to do. You could literally just have a date on your couch with a big bowl of popcorn watching Netflix. I have that every night and it's scheduled. So you don't have to tell people what you're doing or where you're going or anything. And I think, again, that's like the biggest thing I've had to decondition, because you don't owe anybody anything. And you might feel like you're being so mean when you do this at first. Like, you're so mean. It's the worst thing you could do is to set a boundary and tell your sweet gran that you can only come at 8 o'clock because you have previous plans or whatever it is. Or I can't make the baby shower because I'm going to be working or I'm going to be out of town or I have another thing. And they might be upset and they might try to make it about you not being there and that you're selfish or whatever it is. Trust me, there's a ton of ways they can spin it, especially if they are super toxic. Again, it's none of your business. It's none of your business. And people who react poorly to your boundaries, that's already a sign that they were taking advantage of you. That is the biggest thing I will say. If you say to them, hey, like there's an alternative, like, hey, you know what? I'm sorry, I have plans, but I'd love to come to dinner at 8 o'clock. Like, I'll be there. You're still making a compromise. And if that person makes a stink about it, they want to do there to take advantage of you in some way. Like, it's so clearly obvious. And I've had this come up in many situations and even friendships. Like, hey, you know, I'm not comfortable being around you when you're drinking like this. And can we do more activities where we're doing non-alcoholic activities, you know, like crafting or going on a hike or watching movies? And it's like, I don't hear from that friend ever again. I can't speak for that friend, but I have difficulty being around alcohol, like people who abuse alcohol. I've seen it my entire life. And I love to partake in drinks, like, definitely I love wine and love a cocktail, but for me it's just a boundary when it's getting to the point where people are abusing, or it's getting to a point where it's scary. I have to separate from myself. Me stating that boundary is coming from love. It's not coming from a place of like, I'm judging you and I feel better than you. No, I still want to have a friendship with you, and I still want to maintain this healthy relationship and dynamic. And that's why I'm setting a boundary. So remember that. That's just my personal example. But remember that when you are setting a boundary, it seems like it's mean, but truthfully, it's loving, because you're taking care of yourself, you're loving yourself, you're self-respecting, like, everything that you stand for. And remember, at the end of the day, if it doesn't align with your values and your morals and everything that you currently stand in, or it's making you feel bad or making you feel some type of way, it's not for you. And setting that boundary is going to help. So it's not going to be easy at first. It might be faced with resistance or manipulation, and there could be challenges, but you have to identify the boundary, right, first. Then you want to communicate it clearly. And when stating boundaries, it's also essential to communicate them, like, very assertively. Use I statements and express those feelings without blaming or criticizing other people. Just saying, like, just like the example I just said, I can't be around alcohol. Like, I can't, you know? And being firm and consistent, you know, that's the one thing. Like, don't waver or compromise on that boundary. It has to be consistent, because that's when people will let up and not think that you are being serious. So that's the biggest thing. Like, don't push back on that. You have to definitely set it in stone. And also, when you're practicing the boundary, like, self-care, it can be emotionally taxing. It can be hard to make that leap, that bound into doing something uncomfortable. Like, oh, I have to tell my mom I don't want to be there for her, even though I've been there for her entire life. Ooh, yikes. What am I going to be met with? So make time for activities that nourish your mind, body, and soul, right? Like, if that is that Netflix popcorn date, if it is that exercising or meditating or journaling or spending time with people that really support and love you, and you don't have to shrink or be weird or be performative around. I mean, I hope you're weird with people that love you, because that's the best. But seek support. You know, don't hesitate to seek support from trusted friends or therapists. Oh my gosh, my therapist has been so crucial in helping me with my boundaries. Like, and I've honestly asked her, like, how can I assert this boundary with this situation? And she's helped me, and we've worked through that together, almost like workshopping it. And also, there's support groups for that. I was in Al-Anon, which is actually a support group for people who have a loved one who's an alcoholic. And it's really good to validate your experiences and hear other people's stories, and then offer guidance and encouragement back. Okay, that's really important. And you have to navigate that resistance and guilt. You're going to feel guilty. It's just, if you're like a pure person, and of course you are, because someone is trying to like steal your shine and light, you're going to feel guilty about it. But just, again, practice self-compassion and know that you have the right to protect yourself from harmful behaviors. Okay. Like, distancing yourself from toxic people is valid. Your boundaries are valid, and you deserve to be respected and loved and supported in every relationship that you have. So that's the encouragement I want to give to you. There's a lot of little nuances in there, but no matter what, you deserve to feel safe, respected, and valued. Now I'm going to swing the pendulum in the exact opposite direction, and I'm going to talk a little bit about no contact. So just like it sounds, no contact is when you are consciously choosing to not be a part of someone's life, and you are also choosing that they do not want to be a part of your life. Now, this refers to a deliberate decision to distance yourself from certain family members or certain people due to various reasons. So this could be years of toxic behavior. This could also be abuse. This could be emotional or physical abuse. This could be dysfunction. This could be even irreconcilable differences. So unlike involuntary estrangement, which may occur due to circumstances beyond, you know, your control, conscious estrangement is a proactive choice, and it's one that's made on the best interest for you and your future well-being. So understanding that decision, oh man, it's a doozy. Because like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like you just wake up one day and you're like, I choose not to have my family. Because it stems from years of pain, years of trauma, and years of unmet needs. And if you are someone who chooses to pursue conscious estrangement and going no contact, it is a form of self-preservation, seeking to break free from these patterns to create a healthier and more fulfilling life. I know personally, when I was at the brink of going no contact, everything else in my life was shattering and falling around me, and my health was one of the biggest indicators. My body had been in fight or flight for so long. If I didn't go no contact, I worry if I would even be here today. And I'm saying that gently, and obviously trigger warning, because I will be talking about suicidal ideation later on when I talk about my story. But there's a lot of guilt and there's a lot of stigma for someone who does estrange from the family, because you're dealing with guilt and shame, and it's mostly societal stigma. Like, why don't you talk to your family? Why don't you talk to your dad? And everyone just assumes it's maybe because of you. But it's really this judgment and this misunderstanding that people might not fully grasp the complexities or context of the situation. And that's okay. It's not your responsibility to explain to every single person why you chose to leave your family unit or go no contact with a family member. So embrace the empowerment there, right? Because going no contact is a courageous step towards reclaiming yourself and reclaiming and prioritizing your well-being and your mental health. And by acknowledging the family dynamic and taking proactive steps to protect oneself, that might come with a territory of looking like the bad guy or being the scapegoat or having a smear campaign run against you. But you have to do this for your healing, for your growth, and for your self-discovery. And that's why I really want to emphasize the significance of honoring that truth. And most people fight against doing it because it feels so unnatural. And you'll feel, am I going to feel lonelier or more isolated? And yes, that could be the case. But also, you're rewriting your own story. And you're creating a life that reflects your values and your aspirations. And you're not doing it for anyone else. So you really are taking the power back and your well-being back and having agency to create a life you want. And nothing in the world feels better than that, especially if you've been through so many years, I'm trying not to get emotional, of not having that autonomy or having your needs be met in a family situation. So yes, I talked about feeling lonely. Seeking support is going to be really important, right? Because setting boundaries and going no contact, it's a little different. Because most of the time going no contact, it's like you've set several boundaries that have not been met. For me personally, I mean, it was like years and years and years and years of this abuse cycle of having this loving, accepting relationship and then minimizing and then discarding and then back to the love bombing again. So it goes in waves. And sometimes when it's really good, it feels amazing because you feel like you're finally making waves. But if the boundaries are not listened to time and time and time and time again, and you're still feeling like so
honestly, rock bottom, horrible when you're around this person. It's the loneliness you're going to feel being away from them is nothing compared to the loneliness you'll feel in the relationship. And I can vouch for that. And it can be common to feel like, you know, oh, I'm distancing myself. And am I feeling a sense of loss and longing? Of course, you know, there's going to be a period of grieving that person, that relationship. You're going to feel that loss of that person, good or not. There's definitely going to be a little bit of that period where you're going to feel like, ooh, like what did I do? But there's so much power in using resources to navigate this estrangement. So I already mentioned therapy as a safe space to explore emotions, but there's tons of support groups. There's tons and tons and tons of books you can process your trauma with, and you can develop coping strategies for managing any other challenges that come your way. So just you can now use the autonomy to use those resources and networks that you can, and reach out to people for help and develop a community of people who might have similar experiences, or just go inward, go into reflection mode, go into shadow work, go into, you know, really understanding even from childhood or down to every moment. It's going to hurt to relive it, but it's important to uproot it, because then you can practice the self-compassion when it comes up. So definitely know and acknowledge your courage and strength it takes to go no contact, and embrace that healthy new side of you. But what I also will say is, a lot of people wonder if you're going to tell someone you go no contact. Personally, I don't think it's necessary to, just because you've already said and stated multiple boundaries that have been broken. And so if one day you wake up and just want to block that person and want to block their phone number, block them on Facebook or social media, do whatever you need to do to protect yourself, I don't personally think that person needs to be informed. One, because they could manipulate you out of it. Two, it's going to cause a huge drama and a huge ripple effect. And sometimes they can get other family members involved and try to kind of get you sucked back into the abuse cycle, right? There's going to be a lot of ups and downs throughout the years of you not being in contact with that person. And you'll navigate those with grace, I'm sure, especially when you're seeking the support and love that you need. But your life will be so much richer and so much better when you don't have this person dragging you down. It isn't easy, but I can say with full authority, it's necessary. There's no rules for why you need to go no contact with someone. If it just doesn't feel like this person is going to be helpful in your life, and they're in some way bringing you down constantly, consistently, and it's affecting your mental, your physical, your spiritual well-being, go no contact. Don't look back. Like, don't. I'm laughing about this, and I don't know if that's like a trauma response, but looking back on it and wishing I had done this, I said I've been no contact 5.5 years. Do I wish that it was since I was 18, maybe even getting emancipated? 100%. I could have saved myself a lot of trauma. But even if you are 70 years old and you are taking care of an elder, like a loved one or a mom or dad or whatever, you still can go no contact. You don't have to be responsible for people that failed to protect you or failed to uphold a healthy dynamic and relationship. If you go no contact, that doesn't mean you can not go back if that's something that you've thought about and reflected on. And, you know, in therapy, you've come to a place where you feel like it's a good decision or whatever. Doesn't even have to be decided with anyone else. If that's something you want to go back on, you absolutely can. And you can reform that relationship. But sometimes no contact is necessary to get to a place of healing, not only for that relationship, but most importantly for you. You need to heal. And when you're in that relationship, there's no way you can heal. And by the way, no contact can go for anybody. It can go no contact for siblings. It can go no contact for friends. It can go no contact for exes, which I highly recommend, by the way. It doesn't have to feel so absolute. Like I said, everything changes. You have human free will to do whatever you want. And every circumstance is going to be so different. So use your own authority on making those decisions and know that it's not easy, but it is worth it if a no contact situation seems to feel like it's potentially the right decision for you. Now let's briefly talk about low contact. So this is the middle ground between, you know, setting a boundary with someone you feel is toxic or negative and no contact. Low contact is that gray zone, that gray area. So low contact is so interesting, but it minimizes interaction with family members, and you still want to maintain some level of communication. So this approach is chosen maybe if you need to distance yourself from any behaviors and sometimes want to maintain a little degree of connection, whether it's for practical reasons or maybe it's a sense of emotional connection, but it's still prioritizing your well-being. It's still establishing very clear boundaries and still communicating it very effectively with the person you've gone low contact with. So this can kind of help manage expectations on both parties and can reduce potential conflict or guilt. Now, low contact sometimes could be maybe it's like a person who is in close proximity with someone you've been no contact with. Or low contact could just be someone that you feel like a distance type of relationship with, but they haven't personally done anything to hurt you, or maybe they have, but you've made amends. So this is why I said it's a gray area. Now, I've actually gone no contact with some family members and then switched to low contact, and I've toggled back and forth depending on basically how I feel the relationship is progressing and how I'm handling the conversations mental health wise. Now, if someone is continuing to not listen to boundaries, that's where low contact is really helpful, because you don't necessarily have to feel like you are so deeply or intertwined with this person anymore, or that you owe them anything, or that they have to be a part of your life. But if there are some things you want to fill them in on, things that maybe you have a little control over, like, you know, maybe you want to talk to them about your business, or maybe you want to talk to them about your husband or wife, or you want to fill them in on a funny thing that happened in your day. This is something that you can contact them about, and maybe you talk to them every couple of months. Maybe it's once a year. Maybe it's once in a blue moon. I don't know. I mean, you can decide what low contact means. But like I said, it's this middle ground area that is really just for your safety. And because if you continue to talk to someone and keep a relationship with them, and it causes you strife or pain or stress, that's probably a good sign that low contact or no contact is worth considering. Usually the person on the other side does understand some level of your perspective, and maybe they are still intertwined with the person you went no contact with, or maybe they have worked on their mental health and they're trying or striving to have a better relationship with you. And while it's in the healing phase, you're going to slowly kind of let them back in. But the low contact is just a protection and safety measure for you. You can decide when to toggle it on or off. So low contact is a really good middle ground for kind of those maybe extended family members or friends that you feel like might have not understood you in the past, but maybe you want to just keep in touch with every now and then and see how they're doing. This one is so hard to talk on because personally it's so ever changing and different, and you could maybe go low contact period with someone and then go right back into having a healthier dynamic, or you can be low contact with someone and realize it's not for you anymore and go no contact. So that's why it toggles back and forth, but low contact is a good choice if you are having difficulty making that decision and you're working through the the dynamics and the mental health aspects of it or the healing of it. And you both are both, I have to say that again, you both are consciously working towards building and progressing, then low contact seems like it's the right choice in that moment.
Now, I wanted to share a little bit of my personal story. I have discussed it on the podcast here and there. I know I definitely disclosed some of it in the narcissistic abuse episode. If you want to know more details about the cycles of abuse and the inner workings of a narcissist, highly recommend checking that out. But just for reference, I am the youngest girl in a family of four. So it's my mom, dad, and my older brother. We're about 18 months apart. I've always been a little bit of the outspoken one. Even as a child, I pushed back a little bit on things. I was always very social. But quickly, I think it was apparent who in the family was going to be the golden child and who was going to be the scapegoat just based on behaviors. And that's pretty common for a narcissist to select very carefully who they're going to put on a pedestal and who they are going to outcast. And normally the golden child, I mean, there's definitely some horrible setbacks to being the golden child as well. There's no positive dynamic or role that you play in a narcissistic family system. So the golden child has its own pitfalls, right? But the golden child will often be favored in a lot of ways to kind of triangulate between the other siblings. And a lot of times, if there's even three children in the family, there's typically a scapegoat, a golden child, and a lost child. So I almost had characteristics of being the scapegoat and the lost child, because there are many times where I felt extremely isolated or was isolated on purpose while my mom, my brother, and my dad kind of had this click. And that was apparent very early. And even in videos, like home videos, I just recently recovered some a few years ago. I got them digitized at Costco. And I watched these videos back and I had to stop halfway through because all of the videos were me playing by myself, me trying to engage with the family, me being emotionally abused on camera, even at times, like being demeaned, being ridiculed, criticized, things like that. Oh my God, it's just so weird watching that back, because when you are being, I would say, emotionally manipulated your entire life by a narcissist, you have this weird perception of yourself, especially your self-esteem and your confidence, because you've never really been brought up to believe in yourself, because you're supposed to rely on your parents for that. You know, you're always supposed to impress them and trust that they will keep you safe. That's their job, right? And I never really knew until later that was, they were doing the absolute opposite. I was never protected. You know, my father was very violent at times and extremely harsh and critical. He did get physical at times, controlling. I wasn't allowed to make any decisions for myself or have autonomy pretty much my entire life. And even when I went to college, there were still decisions being made for me. But what I wore every day, what I dressed like, what my hair and makeup looked like, my clothes, nails, shoes even, every single thing was a representation of him. And I was a trophy. And, you know, I'm writing an autobiography. And so I go into more detail of this. The one time I tried to pick out an outfit for myself, my mom took me to the mall. It was my fifth grade graduation. And I was so excited to celebrate. And I got this really beautiful daisy sundress. And it was the most exciting thing I'd ever done for myself, because I felt like I was finally able to have some choices. And I came home and my dad immediately clocked this happiness and like took me and my mom into like the living room or whatever and like basically berated us. I had to go back into the car immediately because the mall was closing. I had to return the outfit. Like, he physically made me take it out and return it. And he probably got some sick joy out of all this. And then we went to a different store in the mall, one that I would never go into. And then he just picked some random stuff off the rack. And I'll never forget how embarrassed I was because it was like this bright purple skort with a matching, very thick tank top and a bucket hat. And from that day forward, I had to get every single outfit approved. If it was homecoming dance, if it was any type of public affair where I would be being presented or representing him in some way, I had to get approval. And so, you know, this obviously took a massive toll on how I made decisions in my life because I never was able to have authority. So there was even times where I would be going to get my hair cut and the stylist would be like, oh yeah, your dad called on the way over and gave me instructions. So it was even like getting highlights because he said that my natural hair color, which is just brown, by the way, like, or even sometimes even dirty blonde. He said it was disgusting. Keep in mind, I'm like 10, 11 years old. He was disgusting. It was unattractive. I looked like a mouse, like all this stuff. So I had to get like full set of highlights when I was like 10, 11. And that went for everything. I had to get my eyebrows done. Did I mention my dad was a Libra? Okay. That cleared up anything. But it wasn't just the control. It was also the manipulation, the triangulation between my brother and I. There was constant competitions between us. And he just drove a wedge between me and everyone in my family to create this narrative that was this like poor, sick, like so helpless person. And it even got to the point where I started drinking and abusing alcohol when I was 14. It's also when I lost my virginity. I was using drugs at a rapid pace. I was also in a relationship with a much older person. I was 14 and he was 18, 19. And he was also physically assaulting me. There was just a lot going on. And there were times where I looked to my mom and begged for help. I begged for therapy. And she said, that's just high school. So there was enabling going on, definitely attempts at taking my life. And my entire life, I never felt like I belonged. I never felt like I fit in. I always felt like if I didn't please my dad, I was a disgrace. And every time I auditioned for a musical, and I loved musicals, but if I didn't get the part that my dad thought I was going to get, I was somehow punished. Or there was some backlash always. There was just so many consequences to like very small actions. And I never really could do anything right. Like it was always damned. Celebrations for like my birthday or anything was either one about him, like making sure that he was seen, he was heard, or the celebration was forgotten. You know, my 12th birthday, no one mentioned it was my birthday the entire day. And I remember, and I actually found like a journal of it. And it's just really sad. So there's so many more details I can get into. That's just kind of the crux of it. It's wild to even relive that. My jaw is shaking. Like it almost puts me back in this like high anxiety state. One of the last conversations I had with my father, I actually wrote and starred and produced in my own short film. And I was getting recognized all over the country, several different film festivals. I was getting best comedy and best actress. And it was the highest I've ever flown. I mean, just mentally. And I finally did something for myself. I had this film festival in Detroit. And it was one of the most exciting things to go home and tell my friends and my family that they could come to the film festival and watch it. And before I even went, you know, my dad pulled me aside and said he read my script and said I was a horrible writer or something along the lines of like, your grammar is awful and this isn't funny, this isn't unique, whatever. And I was like, Dad, this script was already like a shooting script. Like we already shot that. And I already won many awards for my writing. So I kind of laughed it off. But, you know, it's like my stomach was churning the whole time. And even what I wore, how I did my hair, that was all critiqued. He said I looked ugly, you know, all of those things. You need more highlights in your hair. Keep in mind at this point, I was 30 years old. I was already a full-fledged adult. And I came home after receiving all these awards. And he basically pulled me aside and told me I needed to quit. I wasn't talented enough.
that I needed to come back home to Michigan where I belonged because California wasn't for me, and that I would never be successful, all of this, you know? And so I just finally like fought back and just said, like, you've never been proud of me, you're a horrible person, whatever. And we just started screaming at each other. And I went into the bathroom and locked myself in the bathroom just because I was sobbing so hard. And he went up to the door and like was knocking down the door very violently, like trying to get in. And I was like, I'm not letting you in. And then he said, what are you going to do? Kill yourself? You should just go kill yourself then. That moment was the moment I knew that I would never have a relationship with my father again. So after I got out of that bathroom, I locked myself in another closet, cried myself to sleep for, I mean, like, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 in the morning. And then at 5:15, I probably got 15 to 20 minutes of sleep. I had to turn around, and Detroit News had reached out to me to do a special about female filmmaking. And so I had to go on set in live morning television that was airing in Metro Detroit and talk about my success. Meanwhile, I've had zero sleep, and I, like, my eyes are all puffy, and it was awful. And after that, I booked a hotel for the rest of my time in Detroit and enjoyed the film festival, enjoyed supporting all the other women, and decided that was going to be the end of our relationship. Obviously, it's come with a lot of hardship because I've had to separate from most family, and a lot of them think that I'm the problem, that I'm over-exaggerating, that I don't have forgiveness in my heart. And a lot of the extended family, you know, they haven't seen the extent of the abuse that happened every single day. I mean, it even goes back to, I talked about utero. I mean, when my mom went into labor with me and her water broke, my dad wasn't anywhere to be found. He was doing something on his own. And I don't even know for a fact if he made it to labor, or maybe he did. But the second he saw me, apparently he told my mom, like, I didn't look like him, and he wanted a paternity test. Or he said, like, you just looked so, like, your eyes were big and your nostrils were big, and I just, like, didn't think that you were mine. And he, like, used to tell that story, like, every birthday that I had. So anyway, I know deep down that my dad had issues with his family growing up. Narcissists aren't, well, they don't come out of the womb like that. They're conditioned to be that way through their own abuse. But one thing I will say is not every single person who's been hurt has to hurt other people. So that's something I try to keep in mind and try to reframe. I am in a much more peaceful place now. I have no contact with my brother, who has enabled abuse as well. And he's also a golden child. And unfortunately, a lot of golden children do have some narcissistic qualities and traits. My mom and I are low contact. She has enabled abuse throughout my entire life, but her and I have worked on healing our relationship. I know she's also, because she's still married to him, still in an abusive relationship. So I've never been this vulnerable on the podcast before, but I thought it was something that needed to be shared. My story, it's a huge part of who I am. I feel very lucky to be alive and to have to have the strength that I have, and to celebrate and inspire other people to live the life of their dreams and to authentically own who they are. I was never celebrated for being a storyteller, but I was also never celebrated for being an intuitive or a psychic medium. Those developed when I was very young and continued to develop. And that's also something I'm extremely proud of, my gifts, and love to share and help people as much as possible. So that is a little bit of my story. And now I want to respond to some of your questions. This question from Gabby, she says, how do you cope with the longing after you've gone no contact? Do you miss certain things? Yes, of course you miss certain things. And because, in my example, narcissists have this really good, charming quality of manipulation. And so specifically with my dad, he knew how to make me laugh. We had similar comedy at some point. He would loop me back in with that. And he was always a very passionate person. And he liked film and television. And, you know, we had some shared interests. So there were moments of me missing that. You know, I missed holidays. And I missed being with family, because going no contact, I mean, I'm celebrating Christmas alone and doing everything alone and everyone else is together. So you miss those moments. But when I've reflected on them in therapy, one, I'm like, okay, holiday is just one day. It's just one day. It's not that special. But two, you kind of romanticize the good things and forget the reality of the bad. When you're on edge the entire time and in a fight or flight response, you're walking on eggshells. I don't miss that, because when you've gone through so much abuse, you have this cognitive dissonance where you don't really remember things that well. Like, you have these total blackouts of trauma, especially deep, deep trauma. There are parts of my childhood that I just straight up don't remember. The coping is just basically like putting myself into logical reasoning, which is really hard for someone that's a feeler. So I just kind of try to remember why I did it and why I made my decision and keep holding my values. This is a great question. Can spirit be disappointed in us for not having a relationship on earth with family members? This is something that I really struggled with, I think, because the whole concept of human living is these karmic relationships. And a lot of time, you know, you have to find forgiveness and acceptance of everybody. Even like Dolores Cannon and people who have spiritual teachings say that, you know, not holding bitterness in your heart is one of the best things you can do for your soul journey. However, I also believe that sometimes no contact is actually also a part of your karmic contract. I have a really strong feeling after knowing my guides and sitting in meditation and all of this, that me separating from my dad in this lifetime is actually karmic on both of our parts. I have the free will to do that, but I also believe that everything that led me to that moment, even all of these synchronicities, or even getting to the point where I was literally at my breaking point, I believe that all of that was a part of my lessons. I don't know. It's hard to say for each person, because some people do believe like, no, I do want a relationship with this person. I do think I need to forgive them, but I also believe that you can forgive someone with your full heart and have acceptance of who they are, but you don't have to keep in contact with them. That's just my personal opinion. I don't see a life where my dad is still alive that I will have communication with him, but at that same time, I don't wish him unwell. I hope he has a great end of his life. I hope there is some accountability somewhere, but I don't expect that. I've never had it. It's not like he's going to change, especially since he's older in age. So that to me feels karmic, and I would hope that my soul and my spirit team is proud of me. And the reason why I feel like that could be the case is all of the beautiful blessings that have come into my life since I went no contact. I have met my husband, who is one of the biggest blessings I've ever had in my life. My friends are amazing support. I mean, just grown so close to my friends. My business has launched, and I mean, I finally was authentically able to come out as a psychic medium. I've wrote several other screenplays since then that have done really well and that have no criticism of them. Just so many things in my life have aligned in such a peaceful way. And I think about the life I lived before no contact, and I was constantly in a state of fear. I was so anxious and nervous and people pleasing and tipping around on my tippy toes and desperately wanting to be loved and accepted, that I did not love myself. And so when I finally made that switch and did the work, you know, consistently paying money I didn't have to go to therapy and working on myself, it's like that's when the money rolled in. That's when the soulmate clients came in. That's when the divine friendships came in. That's when I met the love of my life and the most peaceful my heart has felt in a long time. So that's why I feel like for my personal soul journey and karmic journey, that was the right decision to do. Here's another good question. How do you establish low contact? Do you back away gradually or actually verbalize it to them? So this is completely your choice. Like I said, low contact is such a gray area and it toggles back and forth between no contact or having a relationship. So for me personally, I Actually, I've done it both ways where I've just completely stopped and we'll check in every now and then. And I've also set a boundary like, I think I need time and space away from you. I think this is kind of like a circumstantial thing. If it makes you feel better to communicate that boundary, and if you think that person will accept it or at least understand where you're coming from and, you know, let the ball be in your court, I think that's okay. If you feel like that person is not responsible enough with their emotions, or they're going to backlash in some way, I think it's okay to perfectly step away. I kind of hate this whole song and dance about ghosting is so like poor communication. And I will say, obviously, in dating, like if you're not interested in someone, like you can definitely let them know, right? Like, hey, I didn't hit it off. But sometimes ghosting is just something you have to do for your own mental health if that person hasn't been listening all this time. I don't really believe in quote unquote ghosting. If you gradually step away or the relationship just like put space in between, that is completely a valid choice. How do you deal with the family scapegoating you for calling toxicity out and for you being alone? Yeah, it's hard. You have to expect a certain level of backlash when you go no contact or consciously estranged. For me, it just got to the point where these people didn't have my best interest at heart anyway. Even like some of my extended family, like my cousins and my aunts and uncles, who I love and honestly cherish those relationships so deeply. The phone goes both ways. Like they can say they miss me or where are you at, but it's like they're not trying to check in on me. So I have to do what's best for me. And if I find that majority of the people are siding with the abusive person, which is common because, listen, the abusive person has a chokehold on the entire family. They are in control and they have power. That's the whole reason why they're a narcissist. They have manipulated and kind of tweaked every single person into being in their harem. At that point, I don't care what they say about me because I know my truth. And my truth is the only thing that matters to me. And I've gaslighted myself enough in my entire life to now know, after being validated by several people, my friends being like, that's what happened to you in childhood. Like I still drop like a traumatic memory or something my dad did that was so abusive. And my friends are like, what? And I just drop this over like an appetizer. It's just like so normal to me. And this is why I think getting a crucial therapist is so important. And I'm always going to vouch for your mental health. But my therapist was one of the best and most advocating people in my life. And after I shared my stories with her, she basically like forbid me to have any communication with my family again. Not that she has that authority. She can't make that decision for me, but we workshopped a lot of situations and I'm an adult. I can make those decisions, but you know, she gently reminded me of my worth. And I think that was really important, hearing that back and validating that I wasn't crazy. I'm not this crazy person. Because my entire life, you know, they minimize the abuse, they make it comfortable. They're all so, like, they normalized this family dynamic, which was so unhealthy. And yet I'm calling it out. And I'm the one who's breaking up the status quo. So they're going to do whatever they can to make me a villain, to make me a scapegoat, so they don't have to change or change any behaviors on their end because they can't accept their role in either abusing me or enabling abuse, because both of them can be equally horrific. So that being said, try your best not to be so deeply intertwined with these people's opinions of you. Because at the end of the day, you got you. You got to rock you no matter what. You just have to separate your ego. And I know it's difficult, but trust me, it's just like the peanut gallery after a while. And you start to become super apathetic anyway. Like if you hear something being said about you, it's like, oh, okay, great. Like I almost get out my popcorn and I'm like, all right, yeah, tell me what was said about me this time. Like, this is hilarious. Let's see how much is being spun around like a little spider web, right? So that's how I deal with it. So I had a few questions regarding either being brought up in a very religious family or being brought up in like a cultural family. Like one person said that they grew up in an Asian family and it's a cultural rule that's unspoken that children can't disrespect their elders. So these are going to be, you know, deeply rooted in conditioning. It's so, again, specific to each circumstance. But as you grow older, you can still respect people's opinions and how you were raised and pluck out the positive that you maybe got from religion or got from your culture. But you also have the mind of an adult to make your decisions and see if that's appropriate for you. If you truly feel like your family is going to disown you for having your own belief systems or choosing a culture or a decision to go against your culture that feels more aligned with your values, that's actually truly disheartening and toxic for them to think that, because they are trying to condition you to believe what they believe, and that doesn't give you any autonomy. So I know it's way more layered and it goes back into your history, your lineage, your ancestry. You just have to ask yourself if it's something you truly want and if that's something that you want to fight for or if that's something you want to lie down for. But at the end of the day, karmically, maybe you were born to step outside the normal and go nonlinear and teach them a lesson about their conditioning. You never know what can happen when you're honest and open. And maybe it just starts with a conversation. Hey, you know, I don't actually align with that. And it's been so heavy on my heart because I know it's really important to you, but it doesn't resonate with me, or it doesn't resonate with me anymore. And I appreciate your opinion, but I really want you to also appreciate mine. So I please ask that you fill in the blank boundary. Do not talk to me about religion. Do not talk to me about our culture. That you accept that I will do this that might be opposite of what you expect of me. And I think starting with that boundary is going to be the stepping ground for where you might go. And then you can see how they react to that and then go from there. I love when a lot of you are asking the same questions, because it means it's on a lot of people's minds. I got a lot of questions of how to respond to people that say, but it's your family. That's still your brother. That's still your mom. Those comments. So for me, when people say that, like, oh, blood is thicker than water and all this stuff, I'm like, well, you know, my family has proven to me to be nothing but disappointing and abusive. Would you want me to stay with a family that's abusive? Like, when you kind of reframe it in that way, people get really kind of like shaken up. And at the beginning, I was a little more abrasive with how I responded to people. I don't know if it was my Aries moon or what, being fed up with people saying that my whole life, because that's also what kept me in the toxic family system. Oh my gosh, but it is my mom and I have to protect her. And you know, my brother's having a baby and I want to be there for his kids. And, you know, I want to be a good auntie and things like that. And it's like, that's not plausible, because you can't snap your fingers and change an entire history of abuse or toxicity. It just doesn't work that way. When people ask me about my family now, I say, yeah, I have plenty of family and they just don't happen to be blood related, and I'm fine. And actually, I'm so much more peaceful without my dad and without communicating with my family. So thank you so much for your concern, but that's not actually rooted in reality. You can definitely clap back if you want, but at the end of the day, it's none of anyone's business what you do with your life and with your family. You can probably tell from the way I've talked this entire time, like, you taking your power back and your life back is the priority here. It's not selfish for you to do that. You can still give love. I was always so worried that people would think I was evil and mean, and you know, my friends have proven time and time again, like, no, Steffi, you're full of love and light. And like, all you try to do is love people. And it's so sad that that love was never reciprocated to you your entire life. So regardless of feeling stuck or down or not feeling like you have been received or seen in your childhood or even properly loved, that doesn't mean that you don't have the capacity to give other people the same. And so yeah, you can fill in the blanks with other people. Your mom doesn't have to be your mom. It could be a family friend or, your brother or sister can be a best friend, and you don't have to put the title on it. It doesn't matter. Love is love is love. You can have people be really close to you that aren't blood related, and sometimes I think that's even better. This is the last question I'll do because it's already getting very lengthy, this podcast, but you know, there's so much to cover. If we can't get along now, do we become close after that person passes away? This is a really interesting one because I've come to terms with the fact that I might not ever understand my dad and I's relationship until after we both pass and review our karmic contracts. People have said to me, won't you feel so guilty if you don't talk to your dad and he dies, or you don't go to the funeral, or you don't have this reconciliation before the end of life? And there's so many things I could say back to that. And one of them is, well, is he ever going to take accountability? Like, ever admit what he's done? And that's coming from ego, right? That's coming from me wanting an apology because he wronged me. After he passes away and his soul moves on, he's going to get that spirit review. He's going to understand really quickly the amount of suffering and pain that he's caused other people. And I already have forgiven him in so many ways. And so I don't hold that bitterness or resentment in my heart. And I'm in such a happier place now that I don't hold that grievance or that resentment or that bitterness. I don't feel like I will be sad, you know, when that day happens. But I also have no idea how I'll feel. No one really knows. And I don't think that a person can feel regret if they've made that decision from a loving place to put themselves first. So, I mean, who knows what really happens, but I will say I've connected with so many souls on the other side. And some of the first things that parents come through, if it's a very severed relationship, I will see a spirit step forward. And what's interesting is like they don't step all the way in. So if I was opening my door in the spirit realm, this is all happening in my mind's eye, but it's so obvious because like I'll open the door and let's say like the family members step forward, like the grandmother steps forward first and then another best friend steps forward. And then I'll feel the grandpa or like a father energy or whatever standing like behind all of them. And they're 1 foot in the door and 1 foot out, almost like they don't know if they should come in because in that lifetime, they had a very segregated or separate relationship from the person who's getting the reading. And I always say there is someone here, but they're weary to step forward. They don't know because the relationship was strained, right, in some way. And they end up kind of saying a message of, I'm sorry, or you know, I've learned my lesson or something along those lines that gives peace to both parties. And that happens, I want to say like 1 out of every 5 readings I give. So I do think after you pass, it becomes more evident and clear, but that's the whole point of having a, you know, an incarnation in your human body. You're not supposed to know your lessons. You're supposed to subconsciously go through them and you have free will to decide. So I hope that brought some clarity and peace of mind to some of you. I know the episode was a little heavier and more vulnerable emotionally for me to go through and maybe for you to go through. So I just ask that you take some emotional space for yourself today if you're going through this or thinking about it or you've been there already and it brought up any pain bodies. I just want to say I truly feel for you. I understand you. And that's why I think this episode was so, so, so important for a lot of people to hear. And that's why Spirit was kind of begging me for a while to do it. And I was hesitating. I didn't really want to talk about it, but I'm really happy I did. And of course, you can, you know, if you want to talk about it, you can DM me spirit_sis on Instagram, or you can go to TikTok spirit_sis. And you can always go to my website, spiritsis.com, if you want any personalized readings, like an aura reading or a transit reading, or you want to join our intuition course that has a great community involved, or anything in between. I am sending you so much love today and so many hugs from afar. I'll talk to you soon. I love you. I mean it.